Brands on Brands.
Hey, what's up, everyone? This week, we're talking to Sean Conungo about his new book, The Bold Ones, Innovate and Disrupt to Become Truly Indispensable. All that and more on today's show. Check it out.
In a world where content is king and your reputation is your brand, how do you build a brand that matters? Welcome to Brands on Brands, a home for those that think different and push their boundaries. This is where branding that matters lives. Now, here is your host, Brandon Berkmeyer.
Hey, what's up? Welcome to Brands on Brands. I'm Brandon Berkmeyer, your personal branding coach, and today we are talking to Sean Conungo. Sean is the author of a new book called The Bold Ones, Innovate and Disrupt to Become Truly Indispensable, all about disruption and personal branding in your life, in your career. If you don't know Sean, he is a globally recognized innovation strategist and best-selling author. He previously spent 12 years at Deloitte working closely with leaders to better plan for the opportunities associated with disruptive innovation. He's been recognized as Edify's top 40 under 40. And in 2021, he was named in Forbes as the best virtual keynote speaker they've ever seen. Sean's content on innovation has garnered millions of views, respectively, across LinkedIn, TikTok, YouTube, and Facebook. I've seen him present live in person on stage, and he is truly something to watch. Great ideas, great personality. And also, if you didn't know, in August of 2023, he released a documentary film on Apple TV Plus and Amazon Prime that focuses on his book debut of The Bold Ones and goes through all through how to become bolder, how to push in your career, how to move companies forward. And The Bold Ones, the book, has been touted as one of McKinsey's top decision-making books for leaders. Definitely check that out. You can get that book at seancanungo.com or just go straight to Amazon and check out The Bold Ones. Had a great time in our conversation today. We got not just into some stories about the book and from the book and what he teaches about disruption in your business and in your life, but we definitely dove into how did Sean build his own personal brand speaking career after he left corporate? What did he do to build his personality, to build his speaking career, to leverage video and public speaking to build his brand and a business all from that? So really got into the nitty-gritty of what he did, how he executed. Great talk, great conversation. Hope you guys appreciate it as much as I did. And without further ado, check it out.
Brands on Brands.
All right, let's get going. I'm excited to bring you our guest today, Sean Conungo. First off, Sean, thanks for being here, man.
Listen, I've been waiting to come on Brands on Brands on Brands on Brands, Brandon. It's been a lifelong goal, and here we are. We made it happen. So before we get into this entire thing, I just want to give a kudos to you, and you are a couple hundred episodes deep, and, you know, rate, follow, subscribe, whatever you got to do with this man, because he is putting in the work.
Look at the personality on Sean, the king of compliments coming in hot. I appreciate that, man. It's good to have energy. I mean, with a book called The Bold Ones, I would expect no less. For y'all that don't know, I invited Sean on because I got to see him speaking live on stage at the International Coaching Federation's annual conference. And, you know, I pick and choose where I go, and I try to watch people, not just what they say, but how they say it. And I was like, Sean's got something. And he's been doing this a long time. I don't mean to minimize that, but I was like, out of all the people I saw, I'm like, he stands out, and this is a person I want to talk to and get to know. And I realized this, like, what's the story behind the speaker? And that's why we got him on today. But let's first talk a little bit about your background and how you got started in this industry of disruption. Just give us a little bit of background on that.
Yeah, absolutely. So a lot of my work happened at a large management consulting firm called Deloitte, started in that field, actually in accounting. Then a couple of years later, switched into strategy, and then spent a decade in there. But really, as I moved more into strategy consulting, started to do more innovation work, digital work, helping clients when it comes to disruption, helping really large organizations, incumbents, really ultimately disrupt themselves. And so that's where I became passionate about this whole idea of disruption and that word. And then over time, as I start to build content around that particular word, you know, people referred to me as the disruption guy. And that's how I sort of built a brand in that particular space. But it really stemmed from the work. And it's funny because I was doing all the work, incorporating all these technologies within our particular projects, and then people would brand me as the innovation disruption guy because of the work. And, you know, just project after project after project, just getting passionate and working on more client experiences. That's how I sort of built this up.
And we're going to talk a lot about that today. Disruption, boldness, the business of personal branding. But what I think is interesting is disruption is a topic from a content creation perspective, from a personal branding perspective. It seems like a tough one to tackle because having to create a new talk or point of view every time something new comes out seems like a lot of work. Did you find that the topic of innovation and disruption became like something where you always had to like a new, what do I have to include this month? Because it's innovating again, this new, you know, what is it? How did you come to the table and design talks around innovation and disruption with something that changes that quickly?
Absolutely. Listen, it is at a lot of work, and that's why not many people can do it at a consistent level. And the beauty is that I am so deeply passionate about this space. This is what I've dedicated my life to and obsess over, is finding out which technologies, concepts, people, systems that are disrupting every single industry, every single business and brand. And so absolutely, it is a hard thing to do, to incorporate within your content and presentations. And I am willing to put in the 24 hours to make that happen, just because I'm just so deeply passionate about it. And so I change my content on a daily basis, on an hourly basis, so that I'm relevant. Listen, I'm talking about disruption. I'm talking about things that are happening today. So I need to be in touch. I need to be on the ground floor, because this is, business changes very quickly. So if I'm working with leaders or advising leaders, I gotta be up to date, and you gotta put in the work. And you know, that's just the name of the game.
Yeah, I guess that's what you signed up for. But I think what's nice is now that you've like, you have this book, it's kind of codified kind of a singular idea. It's saying, you know, like, what, how do the rest of us get out there and step out of our comfort zones, do something in our own lives that's a little bit different? Maybe you could tell us about how that started to happen for you. Like, what made you leave the corporate world and start to build your own thing?
Yeah. Well, you know, it's actually the reason why I wrote the book, The Bold Ones. Part of the reason why I wrote the book, The Bold Ones, is because I saw this power shift happening from institutions to individuals. And really, it has to do with personal branding. It has to do with all the guests that you've had on this pod, and the whole ethos of this pod is that there's this massive shift happening to individuals where people are having way more power because of a big reason is through content. And by putting out content, putting out your ideas in the world, that is the greatest source of brand equity that you can start to build. And as I was in the firm doing the work when it came to innovation and putting my ideas out there, whether it was through articles or podcasts or video or getting on stage, what I realized is that I started to build this influence. I started to build this power within the firm, and I would be able to attract teams, clients, and talent wanting to work with me. And I thought to myself, I love the firm and I love being there and I love everything about it. But I realized that the power was shifting to me. And I thought to myself, what kind of damage could I make in the universe if I was completely on my own and I was able to do this not only economically, but just make a bigger impact in the world without having any approvals or anybody sort of in my way? And that was a thesis when I left, and it's proved to be true, where I can basically do whatever I want, and I've been able to gain influence and power by putting out my ideas in the world. And I just believe that it is still, it's crazy because, you know, you've dedicated your brand around this and discovering this idea of the importance of personal branding, but like I still believe it's like an, you know, unkept secret that this is the most powerful asset that you can build, which is brand equity. And I realized that early on in 2017, 2018, when I left the firm. And to this day, you see this happening in every single industry, that the companies that are getting disrupted because many are getting disrupted by individuals because they built their own brand equity. And I can dive deeper into that, but I just think that it's everything.
Yeah, I think what's interesting to me is, do you think more corporations and enterprises and businesses should be teaching the skills that you would want to learn as someone who's building a personal brand, the public speaking, the networking, the, you know, all the things you would add under that umbrella? Do you think that's something that corporations should embrace? Or do you think that they should be worried about losing people?
They should be absolutely embracing this. Their job should be to curate rock stars. And unfortunately, the way that we have designed organizations is to engineer robots, to engineer people that work on an assembly line. And we slap somebody with a number and we tell them to get into work. That's how we've designed organizations. But I believe the new blueprint for organizations is actually enabling rock stars. It's actually enabling people to share their ideas, to collaborate with others, to build their own brand. And guess what? They might leave. But the beauty is that when you have rock stars leave, it creates an amazing alumni. It creates an amazing cultural moat where people are like, hey, this Brandon left this organization. How can I be the next Brandon learning from this organization and then maybe making my own dent in the universe? Like, as organizations, we shouldn't be afraid of people leaving. On the flip side, as organizations, we need to understand that from a performance management framework, we need to maybe create new standards for people that are rock stars within our organization. Maybe the traditional ways that we evaluate, compensate individuals might have to change. And I don't think many organizations are set up for this now. I don't blame them. This is a brand new world that we're living in. And I don't think many organizations have even figured it out. And I believe over the next decade, there's absolutely going to be tensions between their rock star talent and the direction of the organization. You already see it in the media world, where journalists are leaving their media companies and writing their own Substacks. You see it in sports, where you see superstar athletes creating their own brands, their own entities, and in some ways are bigger than the teams. And so you're seeing this play out in different industries. You're going to see it in every single professional services firm. You're going to see it in marketing. You're going to see it in consulting, in accounting, in law, where individuals will build their own brand equity and firms will be like, what do we do with a rock star? In my vantage point, you hone the rock star. You try to keep your rock star within your organization so that their halo helps your organization. Very similar to what, you know, Peloton has done. They've understood that their talent are rock stars. And yes, some of their talent has left, but really they're honing that. So I think it's, I don't have the definitive answer of how you do that, but this switch is starting to happen.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. I think if businesses were limited to, like, you could only keep people for 4 years, then it would be like what Harvard did, right? People, I can't help talking about, I went to Harvard, right? Because they can say that led them to whatever it was. And you could be that corporation. Like, how many C-level executives were like, I worked at this consulting firm, and that consulting firm became the path. You're like, I want to work at this consulting firm because I want to become a CEO.
Absolutely. And that's why Harvard is relevant. That's why people want to go to Harvard, because they go to Harvard because they see the alumni and them going off and making a dent in the universe, and all those people saying, hey, by the way, I went to Harvard. Like, that is the greatest recruiting tool that you could have ever. And I don't think we should be afraid of losing people. We should just continue that pipeline of developing amazing talent.
Yeah, I think the people are leading the way, because I've seen it now. When people do start to create their personal brands, they have to say something. Like I've seen people say, I'm a Disney storyteller, right? Because they worked at Disney, or I trained at the New York Times in publishing, and now I'm, my own journalist or whatever it might be. So I think this trend is happening already, whether they like it or not. But if they can embrace it and build a culture of, yeah, that wasn't a fluke, that wasn't a one-time thing, we actually encourage people to go out there and explore this and, learn these other traits. I think attrition would be a lot lower.
I'd like to ask you, how do you think organizations should treat their talent, people that are building personal brands? Like, what is the right, framework or policies or, talent management strategy that we should adopt in order to keep these people that are building their personal brands?
Yeah, this could be a fun conversation. So for me, I think it's less about the result, like what do we want them to become, and more about the skills. I think the skills they focus on, because a lot of people say, I want to be a leader in my organization, but I don't feel like I'm being trained to be a leader, right? I'm being trained to do a job, like you mentioned, almost like a cog in the company, a commodity. So my point is, what are the skills that develop people into leadership? And the same skills that would make you a personal brand and make you marketable are the same skills I think are valuable to an organization that we don't teach. And I think that they have to do with the things that make personal brands, the things like, do you know how to build relationships with people? Are you out there actually engaging in your industry and your community in a way where you are developing relationships? How do we teach that? By the same token, how do we teach thought leadership and people to look at what's happening in an industry 100%. And have a perspective? How do we get them to, hey, how about you share your ideas every week on what's happening in the trends, in the news, in the whatever, and share that within the organization? They'd benefit from it. The person speaking would gain the tool of what is a unique thought. Like, how many of us have actually taken the time to come up with a unique thought? And then things like public speaking and content creation, I think that just turns into how do you then become better at giving presentations to clients and winning them over and establishing authority. I think there's a lot of skills, but I think that's the point of view. It's how do you develop skills as opposed to like the result, which is how do I develop someone who can become their own business? Well, no, that's not the goal.
Yeah. And by the way, I think many people think about personal branding as, well, I'm not a personality. Like, I'm not good on camera. You don't have to be. Like, it's about creating, it's about sharing your ideas openly with others. That could be through a video, that could be through audio, that could be through writing, that could be a text message, that could be a Slack group, that could be an event, it could be a newsletter, it could be anything. It's just like, how do you start to build your own brand equity? And in the book, The Bold Ones, I have an amazing example. One of my favorite examples is Mary Meeker. So Mary Meeker worked for a bunch of different, banking and investment firms, Morgan Stanley, JP Morgan, and she built basically a PowerPoint deck. She built a PowerPoint deck. That was what she built. And she shared that openly to the world. She did that every year. It became called the Internet Trends Report. At the time, it was new and novel. The internet was new and novel. And she just basically shared this PowerPoint deck openly to folks. She didn't do it with pizzazz. She didn't do it with charisma. She just had a really in-depth PowerPoint deck that she shared, and she built her personal brand on it. And she's been able to raise billions of dollars, over time for her own fund by doing that. And that's a beautiful example of somebody within a very hierarchical, bureaucratic organization that was able to build her own personal brand by building a unique piece of IP. She built a unique piece of IP within an organization, and that's how she built a brand. To me, that's what everybody should be doing, is what is a unique piece of a universe that I can create within my organization? And so, beautiful example.
Yeah, and I think it's going to be hard for that to happen until people who've done it come back into organizations. If Sean now is working at some point back at one of these big companies, he then can instill that as like, I'm going to mentor people with these same skills and traits. I think it just takes that roundabout cycle to where...
No. I don't think so. I don't think so. I think people should be listening to this pod. If you're running, if you're listening to this you know, in the office, you're putting in the dishes, that if you work within an organization, think to yourself, how do I create my own IP within my organization? You don't need somebody like me to come back into your organization. Just listen to this pod and replay it and create and do that. Or get the book, The Bold Ones, skip through the entire chapters, get to the Mary Meeker chapter and listen to that three times. And then that's how you're going to start to create value within your organization. You don't have to be a founder. You don't have to create your own business. You don't have to be an entrepreneur. You can work for somebody else and create your own brand.
I love that. And it's, I think, a great perspective. You have a point in the book where you say these things, when they're new and innovative, they sound like jokes. And I think for some people, that is kind of what it sounds like. That sounds silly to me, to go out and do these things and risk my job and my security and my safety to do these things. Tell us a little bit about tell us about that chapter a little, because I think that was a funny perspective, that these things sound like jokes at first.
Yeah. The chapter is called Disruption is a Joke. And if you look throughout history, every disruptive technology or every disruptive concept or idea or person, they always look like a joke. You think about, the printing press. You know, Gutenberg invented the printing press when 99% of the world was illiterate, but he still built it. If you look at, Uber or Airbnb, if anybody pitched these ideas to you that you would jump into somebody's back of the car or you get somebody to sleep on your couch, you think that these companies were built for serial killers. You look at, people like Jake Paul. Like, he was on the Disney Channel. He was a Vine star getting into boxing. It sounds like a joke, but he's like the most reputable boxer right now, or the most, I guess, lucrative boxer on the planet right now, which is absurd to hear. It's completely absurd. It sounds like a joke, but the whole thing with disruption always looks like a joke until the joke is really on us and our expectations change so quickly. So I would say, don't disregard the disruptive ideas or thinkers. People in the basement, in their garages, they're on the Discords, they're in the subreddits, they're building something that's weird and unusual. Those are the things that actually become part of the mainstream. So don't disregard them. If you see something weird and you see a whole bunch of people that are passionate about that, it's probably going to be something. And still to this day, I look at things and I'm like, that's weird, and it's probably going to be commonplace. And listen, some things we still may not even understand, but it becomes disruptive. I'll give you a perfect example. Back in the day, when I was a kid, I used to go to people's houses and I used to watch them play their own video games at home. I would literally go to their house and I watch them play video games. And I hated it. I hated watching other people play video games. I wanted to play. But today, you have Twitch, you have all these gaming platforms where people are watching other people play games. And I never understood it then, and I still don't understand it today, but it's a billion-dollar industry. So, hey, that's what disruption looks like. You may not understand it, but other people do.
And you know what? It takes me back, because I remember when Nintendo came out, which I was part of that generation, there was a magazine that started, and it was Nintendo Secrets Magazine, I think was what it was called. And in this magazine, it would show maps of the levels and where, how to get through and skip certain things and where to find the secret, hidden things. And it was like, why would you read a magazine about how to play a video game? Why would you want to find the shortcut? Isn't that the point of the game, is that you're exploring and you're playing and you're trying to solve it yourself? But I looked forward to that magazine all the time because you wanted to know, yeah. What was the trick? What was the thing? And until you're in it, yeah, it does seem silly. Absolutely.
Yeah, so disruption always looks like a joke. So the punchline is that always look for the jokes, and there's probably a disruptive idea. In fact, the worst ideas are probably the best ideas. The ideas that sound like they're the worst normally are the best. And the ideas that sound good are probably just mediocre ideas. They're probably the ideas that will give you a 5 to 10% increase. The worst ideas are probably the ones that will give you a 10x value.
Yeah, because they're playing safe. They're playing safe at that point. Like, everyone's doing it if it's that safe, and you're probably not being that really innovative at the end of the day. I want to jump back a little bit, because it seems to me, and I don't know your story fully, but it seems to me that the speaking was what you leaned into first when you went out on your own doing this. But tell me if that's true. When you said, I'm going to kind of start to build my own personal brand and potentially business beyond that, was speaking the first thing? And how did that go for you?
So I would say it's a combination of two. I think it's the speaking and the video. And I think they go hand in hand. I knew sort of growing up, you know, I love doing presentations. I love PowerPoints. I love being able to tell stories on stages, but I also love video. Like my friends and I started a creative film group. And literally when I started speaking, I realized that, listen, I'm putting all this effort in creating this speech. I should record it. So not only is this going to be relevant for the 400 people that are here, but like I could put this on the internet and then it could go places. I could put this out and, you know, maybe a couple hundred thousand or maybe a thousand or hundreds of thousands of, or maybe millions of people could watch this thing. So I always had that idea. So even when I started to do more keynotes or like I was a signature talk, no matter what room I was in, I would record it and then I would put it online, or I put a clip of it and I put it online. And that actually was the catalyst for me to not only get more speeches, but to get my ideas faster in the world. And I actually have the same playbook today. No matter what city I'm in 100 cities, you know, every year, I get a videographer, an amazing videographer. I get them to tape and film the whole thing. And then we clip it up and we put it up on the internet, and it's about the ideas, right? I'm here to put out the ideas. I'm here to give a unique take and put that out in the world. And I still have the same playbook today. And guess what? The cost of the video has always stayed the same. While at the beginning I was like investing in this video, and now because I'm making revenue from the speeches and through the content, like the cost of video never changes. Yet I'm getting paid more. So it always made sense to me. And there's something really magical and almost like a trick when you are presenting on a stage in front of human beings and telling a message. For some reason, that message is going to land a little bit deeper with folks that are watching that on their phone or if they're at home, as if in comparison to if I'm like sitting on this couch and I have an iPhone and I'm saying the same message, it just hits a little different. I can't tell you why. I can't tell you. It just does. So I just believe that creating high quality messages and pairing that with high quality video production, the message lands just a little bit deeper. And I've realized the power of that, and that's been the secret. And I give that secret to 100% of speakers. I'm putting this information out there right now, and yet not a single, like out of 1 out of 1,000 people go off and they replicate that playbook. People don't want to replicate it. Don't tell me why, but I'm like, this is the playbook, yet they don't want to do it.
It makes no sense to me. I looked on your YouTube and I'm like, 6 years ago, I went back. I to this day, you're doing about four videos a month, it looks like right now. And they are all from here all the way back. Most of the videos are you on stage somewhere across the world. And each video is cut down to a particular train of thought, which is what YouTube loves. And it's edited great and, you know, zooms in, zooms out, different perspectives. And it's a key point in the talk that you want to give. And then the thumbnail looks beautiful and it describes exactly what, you know, what the point is that you're making. And you have a bunch of them. And I think it does help that you have a talk that does change and evolve over time because you have more topics you can cover, because some speakers might have like one main talk. But I think if they changed up the intros and outros, they might have more content to develop. But going all the way back to 6 years ago, go ahead.
And by the way, like I'm not even like, you know, I'm not even playing the YouTube game in the sense that like, I'm not actually doing it for views. Cause like some of those views, most of those videos don't even have that many views. But to me, it's not about the views. To me, it's about who are the people that are watching this and what is the value of that particular person? For so long, I engineered my content for LinkedIn and I just threw up stuff on YouTube. And now I want to develop a little bit more of a YouTube presence, but I just been throwing stuff on YouTube because I know that people, YouTube is like the primary search tool when it comes to speakers and content. And so to me, it's not about the views, but it's about who's watching it. And that's why LinkedIn has been my primary, I would say for the longest time, it's been my primary social media platform because the people that are watching on LinkedIn, they're all in my sort of, you know, I'm talking about innovation disruption. That's a business audience. That's the video platform that I love the best that I still spend the most time on because that view is so valuable. Listen, I would trade 1 million views on TikTok for like 10,000 views on LinkedIn all day long because it's a valuable view. And on YouTube, I just think that to me, it's like, to me, the YouTube, especially for a speaker, it's like the resume. The speaker reel is the cover and people like sort of read the cover. They'll like skim the cover, but they really want to look at the resume. And what I'm trying to do with YouTube is de-risk it for a planner to be like, where has this guy spoken? Like, yeah, I see the reel. Everybody has a reel. They can fake that. They can cut it. They can edit it, whatever. Like, show me the truth. And the truth is on YouTube. And so if you can put together, you know, different clips from different stages around the world, like you can't fake that. Like you can't fake 300 videos in and be like, okay, what, like you can't fake it. It's just, it's there, right? So if you're spending, you know, the amount of buying a car, you want to like look at, okay, how does this car perform in different environments? You can see that on YouTube or you can see it on different places. You know, I think when people are looking for a particular speaker, they're not going to just look on Google or the bureau site. They're going to look on YouTube, TikTok, Facebook, LinkedIn. They'll be like Insta. They're going to look at everything because they're buying a car. They want to know if this thing is good, if it runs. And the reason why I spend so much time to put in high quality production, to have multiple cameras, to make it look damn good, because I want to make sure when people see this, they're like, this looks expensive. I can't afford it. And guess what? It is expensive and you probably can't afford it. And so that I can filter out 98% of the leads coming in because I got 3 kids. I got lots going on. So I can't go everywhere. I just want to go to the places that I can add the most value that will honestly align with what my financial goals are and, you know, all that. So yeah. There is a strategy to it all. There is a strategy. You will not find a video on the internet other than like an IG story that is done on an iPhone or a shitty camera. It's all like we're doing this podcast. I'm literally in a studio. I mean, this is our studio. This is my mic, my camera, because I wanted to show up here today so that this sounds good, so that the person that's watching this is like, I want to listen to this. This looks like it's going to be valuable or it's going to, like, he just put in the effort to make this look and sound good.
Yeah, it's social proof. I think it's authority and it's branding at the end of the day. And what I would say, I've looked at a lot of speakers' websites and their reels. I've looked at a lot of speakers' YouTube channels, and they are in misalignment. Like they'll have the fanciest 7 minutes on their website, and then you go to the YouTube channel, and there's not much there. There's like that one video plus a bunch of other stuff that actually discredits them, that doesn't make them look good. And everything on your YouTube channel looks great. And I will say this, the main channel video, which is a clip of you speaking, is, you know, over 400,000 views. And sure, there are speakers with higher watch counts and things like that, but there's not a lot of paid speakers that are very active right now that have YouTube videos that are watched that often, because I know what's happening. They're just not that interesting. They're just not as interesting or compelling as the ones that you've built. And unless you're an influencer, sure. But, you know, when you're a 4 million YouTube subscriber influencer, we're talking a different game entirely. But speaking is B2B. This is a B2B business. We only have so many meeting planners that even care to watch that video. The videos aren't that interesting, except to a meeting planner. But yours are. And I think that speaks to, like, the thought you put into the branding and what you're building out there. And I think a lot more people should be doing it.
You're absolutely right. You've analyzed this like better than anybody that I know. It's a B2B audience. And like, I'm going to be honest with you, like not a single person is going to watch like, they're not going to watch a reel. Nobody walking down the street is going to watch a speaker reel. They don't want to watch a speaker reel. That's not for them. That's for a planner. And actually most of the videos that are on my channel, they're for a planner. If you really want like B2C content, go to my TikTok or go to like my Instagram. That's like more like B2C content. The content on YouTube is for a B2B audience, or it's not only for a planner, but it's for somebody that's a middle manager or leader and getting some ideas when it comes to innovation. Unfortunately, innovation is not a topic that, you know, listen, you can watch Ted Lasso, you can watch sports, you can watch Stephen A. Smith. Very few people want to watch like an innovation or disruption talk. It's just not, I don't know. So, you know, I'm also trying, like, I think, and we could chat about this. Like I am going to deploy sort of a new strategy when it comes to YouTube and sort of change it up a little bit so that we can actually start to develop more of a YouTube audience, because I do see the value of developing a B2C audience, which I'm starting to do. That's why I dropped the book. That's why I dropped the special, because I really believe that I think it will be important to build a B2C strategy going forward. But right now it's been pretty much B2B.
Yeah. So when you were starting speaking and you were bringing this camera crew along, how did you do it? Were you paying them every time? Were these people, random people you were finding, were they friends of yours? So I think people are like, how do I actually do that? What is it really like?
Yeah. So let me tell you the playbook that I've been running for the last, you know, 7 years of my life. No matter what city I'm in, I go to Instagram and I type in hashtag San Diego videographer, hashtag Atlanta videographer, hashtag Victoria videographer, hashtag Orlando videographer. And then I message 10 people with the exact same message. Hey, my name is Sean Kadungo. I'm looking for somebody to shoot my keynote with 2-3 cameras, with a lav mic. Here's a location. Here's the date. Here's the time. What's your hourly rate? Thank you so much. I just need the shots. I don't need any edits. And then they come back with a message. I might jump on a call with them. They tell me their price. Maybe like 3 of them actually respond to the 10. I choose one of them. They come out and we record it. I get the footage afterwards. I send it up to somebody that's on staff in terms of a editor, and she edits it. She cuts it down. And then we put that out in the world. And that's been the playbook for the last 5-6 years. You don't have to find like a, you know, like the best videographer in the world. You need a body that has a great camera. And guess what? There are a lot of wedding videographers, corporate videographers that are available during the week in the morning at 8:30, and they're like, yeah, I'll come out like for $500, for $600, $700. Like the range is usually like from, I've seen things go from like $100 to, you know, $800 or $1,000, like it just to shoot. And that's usually the range. And I will pay based on, you know, what they've done before. And some people are really good and some people are not. And, you know, I've just learned that over time. And now I have a stable of videographers across, you know, North America, around the world that I consistently go back to, and I refer to other speakers. But that's been the playbook. And I just need a body. I don't need like somebody to, I don't know. I don't need somebody to create a Nike commercial for me. I just need somebody to stand there with 2 or 3 cameras or with a gimbal and shoot this thing. It's not rocket science. So I've been doing that playbook for the last 6 or 7 years. And yeah, at the beginning when I was in, you know, back in 2016 or 2015, you know, yeah, I would pay $300 for a video, like for a videographer to come out. I'm like, man, that's a lot of money. And then I would do that 100 times over. I'm like, man, that was a lot of money. But then over time, as you get paid to speak and you get, you know, just like the, like I said, the cost of the video never changes, but you get paid way more. And now let's say you get paid $25,000 for a speech. The cost of the video never changes. And that particular video might get you another keynote, right? You put that video out in the world and now tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of people might see that video. One person might reach out and say, hey, I really love what you said about resilience, about grit, about mental health or whatever. I would love for you to come to Sarasota, Florida and do a keynote on that. So why wouldn't you make that trade? And
it's smart.
Yeah, that's been the playbook.
Well, you know, I think what's funny is when you go to the conference and you're the one speaker that has a photographer with you, the people see that. the people like listening see that, like the audience sees that, gives you more credibility. The conference runner sees that, and they see the quality of the footage you get afterwards as well. So there's little extra pieces that build the extra credibility. I went to a conference once. I wasn't even speaking. I was just attending, and I've got my buddy to come with me. And I was like, we'll do a photo shoot. Like, I'll pay you for a photo shoot, like, while we're there, like, on, you know, after hours, but come with me to the conference. And he's walking around getting pictures of me, shaking hands with people. And the speakers were coming to me, and they were like, what do you do? Like, what's, you know, I want to know you. It was the best hack at the end. And I was just starting a show, so it was great, like, relationship building. And I got great content from it. But then I'd go into other speaker sessions. I'd get a couple of shots of them with my photographer, and I'd send it to them afterwards. I'd say, hey, saw your speech. It was great. Here's some professional photos. Give me your email. I'd love to send you some professional photos that I got from my photographer. Oh, I'd love that. Thank you so much. By the way, I have a show. Like, I'd love you to come on the show. There's so much that you can do with these little steps and strategies to build your personal brand along the way.
I love that. You just hack the system in order to build relationships with these great speakers. I love that. Actually, you did the same for me. You took a couple of pics, and it's funny because like that thing that you came to, that was a concurrent session. I haven't done a concurrent session in like 4 or 5 years, and they didn't allow video in there. And I said, you know what? I'm it's all good, and I'll just I'll do the talk, and I was excited to be there and be part of that community and do that. And you took a couple of pictures, and I really appreciated it. Like, and I just came, you know, obviously I wanted to do this pod, not because you did the pictures, but you came up to me and you were so genuine, and I love the idea of Brands on Brands and personal branding. And I believe in the power of content. So that's why I came on. But I just really appreciate, you know, your level of authenticity and, you know, what you did. That was really, really cool. It reminded me of what, like, Jamie Foxx, when he was coming up and trying to build relationships with folks, like, he would have this camera that he would use, and he would like go to all these parties and he would take all these pictures, and then, you know, people are really influential people like Puff Daddy and other folks would be like, hey, why don't you come to my party and take some pictures? And that's how we built his brand. So really, really, really cool.
Yeah, I think it's the power of generosity and just being yourself. I didn't know anyone at that conference. It was my first time going. I was just kind of checking it out. So it was happenstance that we met, but I think it was, I'm glad it worked out that way.
100%.
Yeah. So anyway, I know people are like, chomping at the bit. This was, I think, a lot. If they just rewind, they could hear a lot of the strategies. But I want to point people to, if you haven't figured out, the book that we've been talking about, it's called The Bold Ones, Innovate and Disrupt to Become Truly Indispensable. It just came out in December 2022. Pick that up. There's a lot of strategies laid out there and real stories that bring you into these strategies that you could just implement every day to take a little bit more ownership of your life. Can I ask you what was the, like, why now this book? What was the thing that made this like, oh, light bulb, this is the one I want to write? Because you could have written about anything.
Yeah, no, to be honest with you, throughout my career, I've helped organizations when it came to disruption, but I really wanted to write a book that was about the individual. It was a playbook for the individual to be bolder, to disrupt industries, to, like I said, to make a dent in the universe. And I wanted to highlight individuals throughout history and people that are in the culture today to see how they did it, because I want to showcase to people that anybody can be a bold one. Anybody can be a disruptor. Anybody can go out and change their particular industries. And I just feel like I said before, the power was shifting from institutions to individuals today because of social media, because of technology. It's become increasingly more commoditized. Like, we have everything now in our pocket. And I believe that, you know, at some point we're going to be able to build billion-dollar companies with one person. Like, we can create a massive impact in the world with very few resources. There was a great book that came out called Exponential Organizations by Salim Ismail. I believe that there's exponential individuals, the idea that you can do way more with way less. You have generative AI, you have content, you have cloud, you have all these things at your fingertips. And I want to put this in a book to say, how should people do this today? But how did people do this in the past? How did the bold ones go off and carve out their own particular industries? And I think it's so pertinent today. And, you know, that's why I was so excited to put out the book and to just like sort of release it in the world.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's a good read. I appreciated it. There's a lot of, I guess, like I said, little tidbits here and there. You never know what you're going to get from a book, but I always gravitate towards like funny little pieces. And the the Disruption is a Joke was one, and the other was like, you called some things creepy. You're like, like be creepy was one of the strategies. And I was like, what is this strategy? And I think, well, maybe you can explain it better than I can, just to like finalize, because we're coming towards the end here.
Yeah, yeah. So be creepy is this idea of, you know, the reality is that if you ask customers what they want, they're going to lie to you, or they have no idea. And I think one of the best ways of finding the best insights is to actually follow people around, is to not to listen to what they say, but to watch what they do. And I think some of the best insights that I've had throughout my entire career when it comes to building innovations or, you know, working on new products, is to just watch people around. It's just to follow people around, to literally creep on them. And I'll tell you one quick story. My friends and I, we built mobile apps. We built this app called Roman, and it was a really innovative app where basically it would take a 5-second video reaction. Like, I would send a video to you, like a random video. It would capture your 5-second video reaction, and then it would send it back to me. And so I would get your raw reaction, right, from this particular video. And it was really interesting. What I realized by not only looking at the data is that a lot of the women, what they would do is they would cover their reaction when they would get the video, and they would also not react. And I was trying to figure out why they were doing this. So one day I was just hanging out in Starbucks and just watched how people looked at their phones. And the reality is that when it comes to human beings, like if I show you a picture of my baby, Brandon, you're going to react. You're going to be like, oh, that, like, so beautiful, so cute. But if I sent you a picture of my baby and I sent it to you privately, and if you were alone, you wouldn't actually react. You would literally be stone-faced. And actually, part of the reason why we react is to make other people feel good. But when you're alone, you're actually faking it. So what we were doing, and what I realized in Starbucks, is watching people as they got videos on their phone or were sent videos or pictures on the phone, people don't really react. The other insight, but while watching people, is I realized that girls in particular, they did not like having people get a video of them when their phones were like this, right? Because it just captured it wasn't a good look. But most people are not going to react with their phone up, which makes them look better. So that's why they were covering their phone.
Yeah, they don't want to take pictures from below you. You want the picture from above you.
Exactly.
It's a better looking angle.
Absolutely. Exactly. So listen, the reason, and then after we did this research by like observing people, we're like, this app will never work, because you're actually, you're trying to get a raw, real initial reaction from somebody, but we're actually just faking it. We actually don't react. So we scrapped the app by looking at the data, like the real creepy data. And that's the whole idea of like, we should, don't just ask people, follow them around, be a creep.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, maybe be creepy, but don't be a creep. We'll have
line. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I like that.
Yeah. Well, I think that's a fun word for a book. I think it's just curiosity. Like if you can be genuinely more curious than you are naturally, I think inherently we have a curiosity, but if we even force ourselves to like get out of our own heads and be like, what would I want to know? Right. Like this podcast has been a great tool for me to be more curious about my world and about people around me. So that when I went to a conference like that one that I met you at beforehand, I looked at like, who are all the speakers here? And which of their talks are that seem interesting to me that I'd want to go to? And then I looked up the speakers. I'm like, okay, who are the people? And then I, like, to your point, creeped on them on social media, and I got to see like what their backgrounds are and what they've created and what was out there. And that curiosity means that when I meet them, or I have the opportunity to meet them, which not all of them I do, but some of them I do, I have something genuinely interesting to ask or say, because I'm genuinely curious and I have some background. It's not the first time I'm meeting them where, you know, when you meet someone for the first time, it's like, so what do you do? Or, you know, like, how long you been doing this, right?
100%.
There's context for that. And there's genuine interest, and you can't fake genuine interest. You have to earn it by exploring. So I think that's why when we met, it seemed pretty natural. I was already there for a reason. I already liked you before we got to talk. So I was like, let's go.
Yeah, I love that. You put in the work, you put in the effort. And I really, really appreciated that. Obviously came through. So
yeah.
Amazing.
glad I got to know you, Sean. I know our time's coming to an end today, but any final words of wisdom or parting thoughts before we close out today?
Yes, absolutely. My parting thoughts are rate, follow, subscribe to this pod, Brands on Brands, because he's putting in the work. You can see it already. So don't even follow me, okay? Just follow this pod and just do whatever you can to share, rate, review, whatever you got to do. That's my only takeaway.
Well, and since I haven't written the book yet, you might as well buy the bold ones, because it basically are philosophies that I ascribe to. So check that out. Anywhere you want to buy your books, Amazon is great. Or just go to seancanungo.com, which will be in the show notes as well, and check that out. Thanks again for your time today, Sean.
Thank you so much.
And thank you, everyone, for listening. I hope you got as much value as I did from our guest today. And tune in next week, as always. And thank you. Catch you next time.
You've just taken your marketing knowledge to another level with this episode of Brands on Brands. But we have plenty more ways to help you build a brand that matters. Head over to brandsonbrands.com for resources, as well as access to our blogs, videos, and exclusive coaching sessions with your host. Be sure to visit brandsonbrands.com.